Inside the ship, Miranda watched Aunt Sully with a satisfaction limited by the knowledge that they'd both probably be dead in a few hours. She had been able to help the girl, to bring her out of that listless, terrified submission that was worse than death. It was satisfying to be able to do for Aunt Sully what she had not been able to do for Brunn. Compensation, and she knew it, was fully conscious of it. That didn't make it less real, or less valuable to Aunt Sully. But the girl was nothing like Brunn. Now that she was too far away to explain to Brunn or apologize, she saw that the daily irritations of living with a young genius had blinded her to what Brunn really was. Aunt Sully, so different, brought it home. Miranda rued all the times she had wished Brunn were more down-to-earth, more persistent. When she got home, if she ever got home, she promised herself that she would take her wild, insouciant daughter into her arms and admit she'd been wrong from the beginning. And she had let herself ignore, for all those decades, the same genius in herself. Why had she pretended to be the sedate, serene Miranda, the beautiful wife and consort, and not admitted even to herself the piratical nature, the crackling energy, which she'd inherited in full measure from her own family?
At least Brunn is free to run her own life now. At least that much has been saved.
Miranda glanced at Aunt Sully's taut, anxious little face.
And I will save this one, too, if I can, to live out her own much more limited destiny. Poor thing. Free and cosseted, she will never be a tenth what Brunn is.
She taunted herself inside for that maternal burst of pride, then pushed both pride and taunt away. Her own children were fine people. She let herself linger just a moment on the memory of each face, as a child and as an adult, then locked those memories deep. In the next hour or so would come her last chance, it might be, of mothering anyone, and Aunt Sully deserved the same fierce loyalty. Their distraction group was headed for the engines, as if they intended to sabotage them. Miranda had no idea how that might be accomplished, even if they got that far. She didn't even know what FTL and in-system engines looked like. She followed the others blindly, with a rear guard behind her, noticing that the crew, even Aunt Sully, seemed to know how to do things that set alarms ringing and lights flashing almost every place they went. They had left a trail of broken glass, smashed cabinetry, locks pried open, lighting units darkened. They had been attacked twice. But by gluing shut the doors behind them, their pursuers had been slowed and finally foiled. Now they were in a maintenance passage of some sort. The crewmen had done nothing for the last 10 minutes, but now paused where another passage joined theirs. One of them had opened a hatch in the overhead and pulled down a folding ladder.
Where is this?
Petty Light Chorus looked over.
Aft communications nexus. Another one of those things they could rebuild to communicate with. Pivot! Pass up that toolkit!
Aunt Sully passed it forward. Chorus led the way up the ladder into a dark, crowded space full of more incomprehensible shapes. When they were all jammed in, she turned on her headlight.
Miranda, glue us up.
Miranda and Aunt Sully pulled up the ladder, then the hatch, and sealed its edges with a glue gun. Under Chorus's direction, they clipped lengths out of all wires and cables, making them too short to rejoin, and then turned the ends back and glued them into knobbly masses.
Some of this is probably also navigation stuff. Doesn't matter. Whack it all out.
A few minutes later, she led them between long cylindrical shapes to another folded ladder. But when she tried to open the hatch, it wouldn't move.
Locked?
No.
Chorus pointed her headlamp at the seam between hatch and deck, where the telltale bubbles of yellow sealant were still glistening.
They're using our tricks now.
We have solvent.
Sure, and we can walk right into a trap that way. Let me think a minute.
Miranda sat back against one of the long shapes. Rejuve or no rejuve, her back was aching from the crawling and stooping, and she would like to have had a long nap. Suddenly, Chorus moved again.
They've got the shuttle bay open. Let's go!
Chorus urged them faster. Miranda wondered if the mutineers knew that the groups aboard would try to get to the shuttle bay. Surely they would. And where they might try to intercept them. She still didn't understand the ship's layout well enough to predict that, but she trusted that Chorus took that into account. Certainly, their routes seemed circuitous enough. In this hatch and out of that, up into the space between decks, then back down. She was completely confused, and would not have been overly surprised to find herself dropping cleverly back into their cell in the brig. But at last, she saw the warning signs on the bulkheads. Shuttle bay airlocks, extreme caution, topped by a row of red status lights. To either side were personnel airlocks, one with a green light and one with red. Then she saw the bodies lying sprawled like piles of old clothes being sorted for the wash, except for the blood, bright as Pater's blood, on the polished deck, and the men and women in uniform with weapons across the compartment from them.
Hurry up, we've got to get suited up.
It was Hartung. Miranda's heartbeat steadied again.
Perimeter? Holding for now, come on!
The EVA suit lockers inside the shuttle bay held most of the suits. Normally, anyone using the shuttles would be aboard before the hatch opened to vacuum. Three of Hartung's people had suited up in the only suits left inside and gone through the locks to bring back enough for the others. Each could fit only four of the bulky suits at a time through the personnel locks, and fewer than half of Hartung's group were now out in the shuttle bay, helping the outside group break into and activate a shuttle. The red light on one lock turned green, as the one on the other turned red. The hatch opened, and four more pressure suits tumbled out to be grabbed and donned as fast as possible by the crew nearest the lock. Then they crammed into the lock and cycled through. The second lock disgorged another four suits.
Go on, I'm senior.
Good luck. Valance, get that suit on!
Hartung, struggling into a suit along with the last of her group, waved as the others pushed into the lock and sent four of her group to the other lock, which would cycle next.
Comm crew coming, open up for 'em!
But only two remained, dragging one wounded who turned out to be dead. Kouros's first four suited and exited, then the first lock opened again. She put the comm crew into suits.
Too many! Perimeter's gone! Go!
Shit.
Kouros nodded to the two men who had already volunteered to be rear guard.
Give us every second you can. And thanks.
That left her, and Anseli, and Miranda.
You and you. I'm staying.
No, I'm staying.
I don't have time to argue with an idiot civ. Get in that suit!
I got you out. I earned this. You know I can kill.
Miranda wrenched Kouros's weapon away and shoved her toward the suits.
Take care of that kid.
Miranda?
Miranda gave Anseli a look she hoped mirrored the petty officer's.
Do what you're told, Pivot. Don't waste this.
She had the weapon. She had the target. She had the chance to be someone she had never allowed herself to be. Flattened to the bulkhead, waiting for the enemy, she felt supremely happy and very much in touch with her lost children and the love of her life.